for Free Speech Radio News. I'm Jim Kent on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
You are listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Amma Bouadi.
Animal research gives experimenters a paycheck, but it doesn't give us cures for human illnesses. Using animals is costly, it's cruel, inefficient, and it's old-fashioned. Sophisticated non-animal research methods, using whole human DNA, for example, is where our money should go. Help us insist on modern research. Rate People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That's PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
And you're listening to radio station, WUSB in Stony Brook, New York. And it's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means, let me just catch my breath, which means, boy, time just flies so fast, doesn't it? It's time for Off the Wall. And time for the machine to work, for once. It's not going to work, is it? Now, I'm pressing the button. You hear this? You hear this noise? No, of course it goes that time. I'm going to name this machine as something with a brain, because it obviously has one. Off the Wall is on the air. Okay, I gave him my best shot. I spent the last few minutes fighting with the Associated Press machine, which I'm happy to say is printing again. I'm also happy to say that the ink has been changed. Now the problem is that the paper doesn't advance. So if I can somehow read the same line typed over and over with many different words, I'd be able to read the news right now. But unfortunately, I don't have that ability. Oh boy, unbelievable. Okay, so we're going to have to just sort of theorize as to what's going on in the world at this very moment, which is fine. No problem. We have active imaginations. And plus, there's so much to talk about that is happening in the non-immediate sense. We all know there's a primary going on out there. You can see it in the fear of the people walking around the street. That's right. The New York State primary is taking place even as I speak. And if you've experienced it, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings. And, you know, maybe some things that that we don't know. Like, for instance, is there a Republican primary going on right now in New York? Does somebody know? I mean, you know, there's only one candidate, obviously. But it's not unlike all those, you know, military despotic regimes we prop up where there's only one candidate. What I don't understand, though, is why? Why bother? I know there's no press coverage if there is a Republican primary going on right now, but one thing that is going to happen in August and early September is the Republican primary. I'm sorry, the Republican convention in New York City. And boy, that's going to be something. That's really going to be a madhouse. I'll tell you, you know, this year I wanted to do something that I've never done before, and that's take the Trans-Siberian Express. That's the train that goes all the way from Moscow to Vladivostok or Beijing, whichever one you choose. And I'm putting the Republican convention in front of that as far as priorities, the things that I have to be at. You know, it'd be very easy to just sort of take off during the summer and not come back until the fall, avoid all the heat and humidity. But the Republican convention, after 4 years of Bush in New York City, 2004, I mean, you know, the fact that it's the Republicans alone, that's going to result in all kinds of mayhem right there. The Republicans after 9/11, after Bush has done all these horrible things to the Constitution and to freedom and, you know, to people in general, and you add all the activism that's going to be happening, you add the overall paranoia of the New York City Police Department, and you add the overall state of affairs in our nation in general. It's going to be interesting. It's the only word I can come up with that I know is going to be accurate. So, yeah, that's going to be happening. What I don't understand about this, though, is why? I mean, why is it necessary to go through all of this mayhem and chaos and pain, which is what it's going to be, simply to nominate somebody that we already know is going to be nominated? They're not convincing anybody of anything. You know, all they're doing is tying up New York City for a week, probably more as they prepare for it, and probably more as they clean up after it, and basically just, you know, making things rather unpleasant. Oh yeah, they can bring money into the city, tourism dollars, all that kind of thing. But you know what? A dog show can do the same thing. It can use the same space too. So, you know, it's not too late to reconsider this. I guess that's the message I want to send out to the Republican Party out there. Reconsider. You know, is this really necessary? Do we have to go through all this? I mean, yeah, I know, they're scheduling it for as close to September 11th as they can possibly do without being accused of scheduling it close to September 11th. I say we just circle ground zero and tell them hands off. Don't use this for your political means. First politician that shows up there during the convention gets sarcastic remarks hurled his way, let's put it that way. So, yeah, that's the political atmosphere right now. Contentious. What do you think of the Democratic process here? I mean, tonight's Super Tuesday. There's all kinds of primaries going on all across the nation. Of course, here in New York, it's only limited to the two major parties. I'm independent. I'm not part of the independent party. I'm just independent with a small I, which means I'm not allowed to vote until it's already been decided in November. Other states aren't like that. Other states allow you to vote if you're independent in a primary of your choice. But New York is not one of them. So I was denied the right to take part today. But I'm still going to take an interest in it. It's very likely Kerry's going to win just about everything. That's the official USB News projection there. So the question is, what happens to Edwards after tonight? Does Edwards concede? Does Edwards continue and, you know, pull a Howard Dean and pretend everything's okay? Or does he throw his support behind the front runner? And maybe, just maybe, be selected as the vice presidential candidate. What do you think about that? A Kerry Edwards ticket. Who would you like to see as vice president? Or vice presidential candidate. We're assuming, of course, assuming that whoever it is that's running is going to handily beat George W. Bush. I know, never assume. But I'm curious if there are any people out there who have the inside track as to who might be the vice presidential candidate, and if Edwards, in fact, would be a good choice for that. I kind of like his enthusiasm, his chipperness. You know, we need more of that. He can be like the morning president. You know, the guy who wakes you up in the morning and tells you to do jumping jacks and all that kind of thing. And then Kerry can be the primetime guy. He can be the guy to sort of tell you about world affairs and maybe pronounce the country's right this time. It looks interesting. It looks very interesting, and it's going to get more heated as the months go on. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Oh, it's time for our weekly Cheech and Chong tribute, or actually Chong tribute. Cheech just happened to be there for the ride. Tommy Chong is still in prison for selling bongs on the internet. We will play a piece from his career once a week until he is released. And so far, the authorities have not shown any sign of bending because of this hardball tactic we're taking. But let me tell you something. We're waking a lot of people up with this. A lot of people are hearing these pieces that have never heard them before. Maybe they'll never hear them again. But the point is, they're hearing them because of this. And that's what you have to do every time an injustice is created. However small, however puny a gesture, you have to do something to counter it. And that's why Tommy Chong has been heard on these airwaves so much in the past few months, and will continue to be, until he's again able to walk the streets with impunity.
Mike, how's it going down emergency here?
Oh, my God, it's swamped, man. We must have every basket case in the world here tonight.
Saturday night, man.
Yeah, they only pack them in here. How's everything at the morgue?
Pretty dead, man.
Yeah, so was that joke, man. That was last year.
Talk about it. Yeah, look at that old bugger coming in the door here.
Yeah, he got it. Looks like 110 of you today. No, it looks like it has.
You can tell by the way he's clutching his heart. Look at the color.
No. He's wheezing too much for it to be a heart attack. No,
listen,
no.
That's like cardiac arrest. I know, man. No, that's a heart attack. You can tell. Look at him.
No, he's having an asthma attack.
Look, he's going to drop dead any minute. So don't tell
he'll
me
make
that's
it over
a heart
here.
Attack.
He'll make it over here.
He ain't going to make it to the death,
yeah,
man.
You
want
to bet?
Get that. I'll bet you.
Okay, we don't
want to
bet.
Okay, coffee.
All right, you're on.
Okay.
Come on, man. Come on, you can do it. Come on. Hey, come on. Okay,
hey,
he's moving.
Don't touch him. If you're touching the bed,
no, I'm not going to touch him.
He's got to touch the bed.
He'll touch the bed. Come on. One more. Come on. You can do it. Lunge out. One more.
Hey, you owe me coffee. All right. I'll pay you later. Okay, I got to split.
Okay, thank you. Oh, come on. Step up just a little bit farther. That's good. Okay, now take Form A in your hand. This is Form A. Hold it, please. There we go. Okay, now take this pencil. Don't lose it. This is your pencil. And I want you to take the pencil and fill out the form. Now, I want you to include your first name last, your last name first, and your middle initial at the end, okay? We want to list all your insurance benefits and your blood type. Now, very important, we want you to include the name of your next of kin because we want to be able to notify somebody in an emergency. Sometimes those things happen, okay? So now take this number here. This is your number. It's number 146. When you hear this number called, just go with the nurse and she'll take care of you, okay? Okay, have a seat over there in that gray chair. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now serving number 7. Number 7, please step forward.
Yeah, I'm number 7.
Yeah, you're number 7. Do you have your card?
No, I lost it.
Yeah. Well, what seems to be the trouble with you?
Listen, man, I'm having trouble with my nerves. I think I've been up 4 days, man.
Yeah, I know. So I'm really, really wired.
I'm sick. I got a headache. I need something.
Yeah. What would you suggest we give you?
A couple of reds would be a groove, man.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd like that. I'm sorry, we can't give you anything. You want to step aside, please?
Hey, man, don't hand me that crap.
Listen, I'm not.
Hey, now listen, man. A couple of reds of mine got some reds here, man. So don't hand me that crap.
No, listen,
man.
We're not authorized. I'm not authorized to handle
hey, man,
that. I'm only an intern.
Now,
I'm not a doctor.
Crap, man. You
I don't make the
I'm
rules.
Like,
I just carry
like,
them
like,
out. No, hold on.
No, you don't know what it's like, man. I'm wired, man.
Come on, calm down. Calm down. Don't start crying. You're drawing a crowd. Come on, now. All right, just calm down. Quiet now.
I need something, man.
All right, here, I'll give you something. Here, hold out your hand. Come on, there. Right. There, well, here's one more. Okay. Now, you feel better now? You okay?
Yeah, man. All right,
okay.
Say, listen, man.
Yeah?
Could you make a couple more arms for my old lady there?
The London boiler is on the line.
Yes, and that, by the way, was not meant to offend any doctors, anybody who works in hospitals, anybody who's in a waiting room right now, or anybody. We don't want to offend you. We don't want to scare you, make you think that that was real, that that was something that was actually going on. Do I really have to read this? Every time I do something that could be misinterpreted? Fine. So if anyone was upset, please don't be, because we're here to provide you with calming information, news, music, and sometimes just silence, because sometimes that's the only thing that we can do. Okay, all right. Oh, and I'm supposed to apologize, too, in advance, for anything that I may say, that anything that I may have said, anything that I may play or may have played, or implied. Implications, too. And also, for the people that call in and say things that perhaps you may not agree with, it's important for me to apologize for that as well, and to make sure that nobody is offended, scared, or otherwise misled into dangerous ideas or thoughts. And if there's any kind of sarcasm that may be residing in my voice as a result of this, I'm sorry for that, too. Takes time for these things to take, you know. Okay, sorry for the delay. Time to take a look at what's going on in the rest of the world. Talking about offensive radio. Well, let's first talk about non-offensive radio. All right. Alistair Cook. That name ring a bell? He's the guy that used to host Masterpiece Theater back in the 1970s, and he also did this radio show, which I'll bet a lot of people didn't hear because a lot of people don't listen to shortwave or to BBC, which is now aired over some public radio stations at night. Only at night, though. Never in the daytime. What in the world's going on here? You know, I made this mistake last week. Hang on a second. Yeah. Hello? No. I'm on the air. You're not on the air. Yeah, so you know you're calling me during my show. Is that the game now? I see. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, listen, we've got a lot of people here that are hanging on to my every word, and I can't just, you know, have a conversation on the phone. Much as important as a phone conversation is, obviously, because, you know, I always keep my phones on. I never turn them off. Everybody knows that. Yeah. Don't worry, I won't. Thanks for the reminder. Oh, boy. Oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, sometimes maybe I think I should turn the phone off. You know, sometimes... No, that's foolish talk. What was I saying? Yes, yeah, so Alistair Cook does this program called Letter from America. Now, Letter from America means that it's a letter to someplace else. He's in America, he's in New York, he records this this weekly radio program, and it's aired in England and over shortwave and over the NPR or Public Radio International version of BBC, which airs at night and not in the daytime. Well, he's retiring, 95 years old, and he's signing off after doing Letters from America for guess how long? 58 years. 58 years. That's amazing. We've done this show 1 year. The other show we've done longer, but nowhere near 58 years. That is something. That's a successful program. But because of poor health, he was unable to continue doing this. I listened to this only a couple of weeks ago, driving around in New York, and it was so interesting, so detailed, that I wound up sitting in my car for about 10 minutes after I had parked it, waiting for it to end. And hanging on to every word. So, sorry to see him go. Definitely a familiar voice. Maybe they should air repeats, you know? Letters from America from 58 years ago, I think, would be pretty interesting. Anyway, he says, throughout 58 years, I've had much enjoyment in doing these talks and hope that some of it has passed over to the listeners, to all of whom I now say thank you for your loyalty and goodbye. Millions of listeners across the world have tuned in for Cook's weekly observations of life in America since his show began on Radio 4 in 1946. It also has been broadcast over the BBC World Service. He's also well known for Alistair Cook's America, which was a BBC series aired around the world, and as host of the PBS series Masterpiece Theater. That lasted for 22 years, him hosting that show. It's also said to be the world's, Letters from America, that is, said to be the world's longest-running radio speech program, and it was originally intended to only last 13 weeks. How about that? So that's a true master, true genius of radio, whose voice is consigned to our memories now. And then you have Howard Stern. Howard Stern, yes. That's what everybody's been talking about in America for the past week, as far as radio programs. The U.S.'s largest radio chain, and that would be, of course, Clear Channel. They have taken shock jock Howard Stern off their stations indefinitely. Now, I'm not sure if this has been resolved since last week. I don't follow it. I haven't listened to his show. But it's important to clear up a couple of things. Everyone's reporting that he's been suspended. He hasn't been suspended. He still does his program every day in the same place. The station he works for is an Infinity station, not a Clear Channel station. So the only thing that has changed is that a certain number of stations aren't carrying his show because their parent company said what he does is objectionable. Now, Clear Channel owns 1,200 stations. I can't even conceive of that. They own 1,200 stations. Now, he doesn't air on anything close to that. I think he airs on maybe a dozen stations of those. And he probably airs on all kinds of other non-Clear Channel stations in addition. But it's interesting, when one company makes a decision, of course, many stations have to follow the policy. And what's going on is it's pretty frightening. It's got nothing to do so much with Howard Stern as it does with simply fear-mongering in the radio industry. And that's what I'm more concerned about. All right, listen to what they say. We will not air Howard Stern on Clear Channel stations until we are assured that his show will conform to acceptable standards of responsible broadcasting. Well, that means he's canceled permanently then, if you've ever listened to the program. No, seriously, though, I mean, I've listened to the show. I think it's juvenile, I think it's stupid, and, you know, in many cases, distasteful. But you know what? I dealt with it. I tuned to another station. There are plenty of people out there that enjoy that kind of thing. There are plenty of people out there, obviously, who are his big fans. And who am I to say, because I don't like it, because I don't think it's you know, good radio, I'm going to ban it. I'm going to insist that nobody can hear it. That's insane. That's completely insane. Well, basically, what Clear Channel has done is they've reacted. Obviously, this is all related to the Janet Jackson incident, where the FCC Commissioner Powell went ballistic. And where, you know, basically a lot of people demanded that the broadcasters be reined in because they're so out of control. They are so out of control that they must be stopped. Well, first of all, not many kids are listening to Howard Stern because they're supposed to be in school, okay? So I don't know why they would be listening at that time in the first. I guess they could tape it, but, you know, you could tape anything. You could tape anything and listen to it at another time. If it's interesting to people, they're going to listen to it one way or another. He could broadcast on the internet. People would listen to that. What are we going to do? Shut down the internet? Maybe. Maybe that's around the corner. Anyway, this happened on the eve of Clear Channel representatives appearing before a congressional hearing, a congressional subcommittee on indecency over the airwaves. It makes perfect sense, you know. We got rid of this guy because he wasn't appropriate, and we're sorry. They were able to say that. I think it was on Thursday. And nobody laughed. Everybody took it seriously. And in addition, the company is saying, Clear Channel, that is saying that they have adopted a zero-tolerance policy that calls for immediate suspension of its on-air personalities across the line. Well, Howard Stern has been across that line now for many years. He hasn't even come back over the line. He lives across the line. So to suddenly say, don't cross the line, is insane. You might as well tell him to just shut up and play music. If he had worked for Clear Channel, they would have fired him. And according to the person who was speaking for Clear Channel, who's named John Hogan, he's the president and CEO, he says there would be no appeals and no immediate steps for DJs found in violation. In other words, we say you're guilty, that's it, that's the end. And they're also going to insist that on-air personalities share the cost of any FCC fines. And while it's not fair for the station to go bankrupt because of what somebody says over the air, this kind of a thing is, it's panic. They're panicking. They're afraid of that backlash. So they're trying to cover their asses however they can. And this is the result. Now, you know, I think they may have bitten off more than they can chew this time. Because you're dealing with a very popular program, a very large contingent of people that hopefully can get it together enough to realize that they're fighting an important fight here. Forget all the stupidity and the sexism and the racism and whatever else goes over the airwaves there. This is more important. This is about speech. This is about expressing yourself. This is about having the right to listen to what you want to listen to and not be talked down to by somebody who thinks everything should be on the level of 8-year-old mentality. So I don't have an update on that. I don't know if he's back on Clear Channel, if this is going to drag on for much longer. But I'll tell you, it's affecting a lot of radio stations, a lot of people in radio. Who are worried now more than they were before, which was too much back then, about possibly offending somebody over the radio, and certainly over television. I mean, when are we going to grow up? When are we going to realize that somebody could say something that you don't agree with, that you find offensive, and you either fight them on those grounds, or you go someplace else? Why do you think so many programs on cable TV are so popular now? Because they don't have to deal with the network television censorship crap, which is pervading the industry and making things so bland and boring and formulaic. When you can express yourself freely, you tend to be more creative. Just go to any Broadway show, go to any theater, and you'll see things there that are guaranteed to offend the Bible thumper someplace, because when you are artistic, you tend to sometimes be offensive. It's not a requirement, but it's something that often happens. And that's why art has left so many of these commercial establishments, because the only thing they really care about is making the money. And that's why they're scared, because if they start losing licenses, they start losing lots of money. If they start losing sponsors because the sponsors are afraid of the Bible thumpers, well, they're going to lose more money. They don't care about the speech. They don't care about the important issues. Why should they? So it's time for artists, whether they be radio artists, television artists, movie artists, book artists, whatever. Time for them to unite and stand up for free speech. Whether it's the printed free speech, the over-the-air free speech, the live free speech, what have you. We're all in this together. And then we go to this crazy film, The Passion of the Christ. Yeah, I don't know what all the fuss is about, okay? I really don't know what all the fuss is about. Mel Brooks is a genius. This guy has been making people laugh for decades. What Mel Brooks has done with The Passion of the Christ is fool everybody. Everybody's taking this film so seriously, they don't realize it's just another one of his comedies. The whole thing is a parody. Yeah, the parody of the Christ. That's what they should be calling it. And everybody's, you know, running around like crazy, talking about, oh, this is offensive to this group of people, this is overly violent, this is horrible, oh, you know, he's the second coming, and he must be laughing. Yeah, just sitting back there, counting the money as it pours in. Mel Brooks, what a genius. And, of course, you have people in Georgia who are upset because I almost see this. It's funny. Tickets at their movie theater somehow came up with the number 666, which many Christians recognize as the Mark of the Beast. They're appearing at a Georgia theater for Passion of the Christ, drawing complaints from some moviegoers. The machine that prints tickets assigned the number 666 is a prefix on all the tickets for the film, said Gary Smith, owner of the movies at Berry Square in Northwest Georgia. The 666 begins a series of numbers that are listed below the name of the movie, the date, time, and price. It's from... Why are the phones lighting up like this? All right, I'm going to take a phone call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. You said before that you were talking about Mel Gibson, but you said Mel Brooks.
Mel Gibson? Who's Mel Gibson?
Yeah.
Wait. I'm not sure I understand. I was talking about Mel Brooks, the comedy writer, the genius, the guy that's fooling everybody with this film. But you don't think the film is funny?
No.
The Passion of the Christ.
That's not Mel Brooks.
That's not Mel Brooks. What do you mean?
It's Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson.
Are you saying that just for a parody?
No, I thought he was saying it just for a parody. You're saying that Mel Brooks... What is Mel Brooks' involvement in the film, then?
There isn't any.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that changes a lot.
It's Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. I'm gonna look into him.
He
All
put
right.
$25 million of his own money in there.
$25 million of his own money?
Right.
How did he get so much money? This guy must be rich.
He is.
Wow. Okay.
Very well. He's the director of Braveheart.
Well, I'm sure that's offensive, too. It sounds, you know.
Oh, no, really.
How can a heart be brave? It's an organ. I don't know. Where are you calling from, sir?
Bayshore.
Bayshore. I want to thank you very much for straightening me out.
That's okay.
All right.
Bye.
Thank God for our listeners. Because I had more to say on the subject, you know. I was going to... Oh, it's a good thing I didn't say that. It's too bad I said that. Well, okay. I don't know who this Mel Gibson character is. Probably some young punk out of New York City or something like that. Trying to cause problems, mixing people up. You're no Mel Brooks, you never will be, all right? So don't even bother trying. You see me laughing? I'm not laughing. It's not funny. Blazing Saddles was funny. History of the World Part 1 was funny. But this isn't funny at all. So yeah, there's a whole big controversy about this film. Everyone's freaking out about it. I haven't seen it. I don't know if I want to. It's kind of scary, you know, seeing people's reaction to this. People flipping out. It's like, oh my God, this is so true. How did they know it's so true? It's a movie. it's how true the person making the movie thought it was. But it's, you know, it's fiction because, as far as I know, nobody was there with cameras. I've seen things that were captured with cameras that are still misrepresented later on. So the odds of this Mel character. Mel Torme, was it? What's so funny? All right. Well, whoever made this thing, their conception is, you know, their conception. All right. 631-632 WUSB. You know, sometimes I get mail. Sometimes I lose it, too. Here's somebody that's taking issue with something I said a couple of weeks ago. People are so argumentative, you know. You say something, and now right away someone's got to come in with another perspective, another so-called fact that makes you seem completely wrong. But you know, it's not. It doesn't have to be that way. It's all perception. I say Mel Brooks. Someone else says Mel Gibson. You know, it's all perception. Who's to say? Anyway. A couple of weeks ago, we were celebrating Kim Jong-il's birthday, or actually, we were a day late. We were trying to call North Korea because apparently Bush was too busy or secretly didn't want to or something like that. And we were just noting how the whole country had the day off on Monday, February 16th, for Kim Jong-il's birthday, because that's when it was. He turned 62, I believe. And I don't know if it's an organized campaign or what specifically, but a bunch of real wiseacres wrote in and called me all kinds of names saying, "Emmanuel, what are you talking about? It's got nothing to do with Kim Jong-il. We had off for President's Day." It was President's Day. It wasn't Kim Jong-il's birthday. That's not why we had off from school and we had all the nice sales down at the mall. President's Day falls on the third Monday of February every year. Yeah, well, guess what? Kim Jong-il's birthday falls on February 16th every year. And sometimes that's a Monday, sometimes that's a Tuesday, sometimes it's even a Friday, and they get a long weekend. And one other thing, just to set this straight, Kim Jong-il is a president. So while you may have been told it was President's Day, those of us who have our feet planted firmly in reality know that it was President Kim Jong-il Day. It just annoys me to see misrepresentation. Speaking of North Korea, they just had the summit about getting North Korea to stop what they're doing with nuclear weapons. Which, you know, I'm kind of comfortable if North Korea doesn't have nuclear weapons. I'll admit that right now. And I'm comfortable if, you know, countries like Togo don't have nuclear weapons. I'd be very comfortable if countries like the United States didn't have nuclear weapons, but, you know, we're talking fantasy land there. I can never really understand, though, how we can make it such an issue that other countries want parity. You know, they want to be able to defend themselves against what they perceive as a threat. Yeah, I know, they're not us. They're different. They're different people. They're different countries. They speak different languages. But why is it surprising that other countries want to develop this technology? I mean, can't we at least say, you know, it's admirable, guys, that you have the quest for knowledge, that you have this curiosity. But we just can't allow it. Why don't you use that enthusiasm, use that brain power for something else, you know, like maybe fixing cars or something. But just stay away from the nuclear stuff. You know, if we were nice about it, maybe they'd do it. But instead, you know, sanction this and threat that. Just because they want to be like us. They want to have nukes, too. And chemical weapons. And biological agents and things like that. Anyway, so they just had the summit. Now, if you were a television viewer in North Korea, and I don't think you were, because I don't think we have very many North Korean listeners. I'd like to be proven wrong on that. But if you were a television viewer in North Korea, you probably didn't hear much about the talks in Beijing that were aimed at curbing the secretive nation's nuclear ambitions. That's because in Kim Jong-il's reclusive regime, primetime fare features only one character, Kim Jong-il. What a coincidence. For those lucky enough to have access to a television, on a recent evening, part 6 of The Legend of Blossoming Love for on-the-spot guidance was screening. I am so upset that I missed that when it repeated over on Bravo. We read a couple of titles of these programs last couple of weeks. Cartoons, documentaries, all kinds of things. Some of it is pretty classic. In this episode, the mysterious Kim, who was otherwise known as the Great General or the Dear Leader and the Peerless Patriot, showed he was a man of the people. From east to west, north to south, the Great General travels the country, the announcer intones. You warm us like the sun. Have you ever served a great leader like this? Nobody answers? Okay. Obviously, you haven't. Actually, you know, I'm not sure about this story, because they refer to him as the dear leader and the great leader. I believe, and forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn here, but I believe his father, Kim Il-sung, was the dear leader, and he's known as the great leader. So it might be a mistake in the story. But I know one of them is dear leader, one of them is great leader. I think the current one is the great leader, because you'd rather have a great leader than a dear leader in power. And dear leader is kind of like a tribute to somebody who has passed onto a different realm. The godlike Kim is also seen providing what the North Koreans call on-the-spot guidance to the armed forces. The message is clear enough. The 1 million-man army is Kim's main power base. In a country where most people go hungry, I always have to mention that. They can never just, you know, bow down in praise to North Korea. They always got to mention the starvation thing. The dear leader, maybe it is dear leader, with a fondness for fast cars and fine dining, is seen giving advice on nutrition and inspecting mountains of food designed, or destined rather, for the troops. According to the announcer, Kim tells the troops, "There's nothing I wouldn't spare for my soldiers. Behind every great general is a great army." But Kim's wise words are not limited just to food. For the female soldier, the great general provides a karaoke machine and tips on how to use it. "We're so lucky," the announcer says, "to be loved by him." There's also some on-the-spot guidance in the fashion department from the man who is rarely ever photographed wearing anything but his gray-green suit. It's because he looks good in it. Why fix something that isn't broken? "All these uniforms," the announcer declares, "were made with the love of the great leader." Again, great leader, dear leader, make up your mind. He can't be both, can he? Maybe I missed a memo. Because Kim wants to keep his soldiers healthy, there's some guidance about how to brush your teeth. For their loyalty, there are free TV sets all around. This is for the army. The ecstatic troops dance in the snow, no doubt eager to tune in for part 7 of The Legend of Blossoming Love for on-the-spot guidance. Well, is it really much worse than Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I don't know. Good evening, you're on the air.
How you doing?
What's up?
Emmanuel, who are we talking to?
You're talking to the radio.
Hey, listen, I got to tell you something about your show on the other station. I'll never get a hold of you. I got to hit real fast, okay?
You're talking about the other show on this show. Are you going to talk about this show on the other show?
Okay.
Well, that's the only way I can do this.
Okay, here we go. You ready?
All right.
Okay, you got to call at the end of the show. Last week, talking about how they were upset that you were preempted by a couple minutes for the news format. Remember that caller?
Yeah, he kind of voiced some opposition to some other programming on the station, I believe.
Here to say, this guy is known, I don't know if you know this, but other shows, he'll use the N-word, he'll say the most reactionary, fascist, bigoted things. But when he called your show and was taking your side, he suddenly, I'll assume you didn't know it was his voice.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody starts with a clean slate when they call in.
But you see, I'm raising an interesting question. Everyone starts with a clean slate, except the community that listens to that station knows him as a bigoted racist.
Well, then it must be interesting to hear what he says when he's not speaking bigotry.
Okay, well, do you want to call it interesting, or more like he should be at that point confronted, why are you a bigot, you know, racist, the first, you know, you think they're unrelated, and fine, let him come to your defense about you losing a few minutes of the show for that, and that's unrelated to his fascist personality otherwise.
Well, you see, I'd never heard the guy before, so obviously I can't confront him with something I haven't heard. If the person is calling my program and saying things like that, obviously I'm going to confront them, but
sure.
I can't take someone's word that this person is a bad person until he proves it to me.
Okay.
All right?
There you go. That's the resolution to that issue.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right. All right, now, you know, let's call that this program, Off the Wall, not Off the Hook. 631-632-WUSB, 9872, for those of you without letters on your phone. And some very important news was reached or announced today. Very important news. And I'm not kidding about this either. NASA scientists say the Mars rovers have found what they were looking for, hard evidence that the red planet was once soaking wet. This is a big deal. In fact, I believe on the CNN webpage, this is the front page story, the first story. Forget about things blowing up in Iraq and shootings in Pakistan and, you know, the latest Mel Whatever film, you know. That's all secondary to this. And they're right. They're right. This is amazing. Do you realize what this means? Water once flowed on Mars. It's definite now. It's definite now. We have concluded the rocks here were once soaked in liquid water, said Steve Squires of Cornell University, the principal investigator for the Science Instruments and Opportunity and Spirit. The second question we've tried to answer, were these rocks altered by liquid water? We believe definitively, yes. 3.5 years ago in July 2000, we were on stage here to talk about sending two rovers to get evidence of past water. NASA and its international partners have turned those dreams to reality, said Ed Weiler, NASA Associate Administrator for Space Science. And this is simply unbelievable. All the technological advancements of the world, I think, really have to pale in comparison right now to what these guys did. Sending a couple of robotic rovers over there that they could control, that they could collect data and amazing photographs and take rock samples and conclude something like this. That water once flowed on a planet that's right next door to us. Do you realize how lucky we are? We could be next door to planets that are just, you know, dead planets that never had anything. This planet could have fossils. They could be finding all kinds of evidence of life. It could even have something now. It's possible. Anything's possible. But I'd like for everybody tonight at some point just to read about this. See the significance. And tell those people who say it's a waste of money to just shut up, because they don't know what they're talking about. This is what it's all about. Moving forward, learning, discovering. And for the first time, we're learning about possible life on a different planet. Do you realize what that can mean? How much understanding of everything can come out of this? I mean, you know, certain forms of life share all kinds of similar developmental characteristics of sorts because they're from the same planet. But when you go to a different planet, I mean, are people there or animals there going to have, you know, two eyes? Or are they going to have four eyes? Are they going to have a head on top of their body or in the middle? You know? And they can start to see if maybe Star Trek is right and everybody speaks English and is a humanoid. It's important to know these things. At least it is for me. So, this is very good news. And hopefully, we'll get some real commitment to continue to explore this. I know bombing people is important. Taking over governments is important. Fighting amongst ourselves is very important. But we can still do all of that. And move forward at the same time. Because, you know, eventually we're going to do something so bad to this Earth that it won't be livable anymore. I know that's no reason. I don't want to encourage people to do that. But even if we don't, eventually the Earth is going to be uninhabitable on its own. And that's why the stars, they're there, you know. They're the next obvious place to explore. Not that we should stop exploring around here. Not that we should stop learning. All right, let's take some phone calls. 631-632 WUSB. And good evening, you're on the air.
Good evening. I have to tell you that I really enjoy your show.
Well, thanks. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from right here in Long Island, South Shore.
Oh, great.
And I find that I have to take notes because I have something to say like about everything you talked about tonight.
Well, go right ahead. The floor is yours.
The thing is the primaries. Mm-hmm. There definitely was a primary today. And the other thing is anyone who is whining and complaining that they can't vote in this primary, there's a way to weasel around it. All you do is change your party affiliation just for the primary.
Yeah.
Go in and you vote. And then next time around, you know, then you can go back and change it again. So
yeah,
that's number one.
I guess that is one way around it.
Absolutely. Why not play their stupid games?
Because then you get a lot more junk mail. You know? Then they think you're a Democrat, or the Republicans think you're a Democrat. And I don't know. It's just something.
Well, but then when it's the Republicans' turn, you switch around and you become a Republican, and then you're on everybody's mailing list. You get to see all the propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I hadn't really thought about that, to be honest. Maybe I'll consider doing that.
Very good. So that's number one. Number two. Howard Stern has been doing this, whining and complaining. They're trying to censor me, blah, 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 blah. I'm quitting. I'm doing this ever since, when was he on AM? In the early 80s?
WNBC.
Old.
Yeah.
He's whining and complaining about Inus. So it's like nothing new.
Well, what's new is the reaction of the parent company, how they're running scared from these people that just
only
want absolutely nothing objectionable.
The parent company is so big.
Well, that is the real issue as far as I'm concerned. Why is Clear Channel so big? Why do they own 1,200 radio stations?
Exactly. So that's really more what the issue is, instead of this hysteria about the decency, because it's the exact same thing that happened on, I guess it was ABC or NBC
mm-hmm.
years ago. They tried to shut him down because he kept crossing that line.
Okay.
Absolutely right. He's never been over that line. And obviously the Mel Gibson thing, I'm sure you're just playing with everybody on that.
Yeah, it was, let's just say it was a joke, all right? That's probably the easiest thing to do at this point. Yeah.
I really enjoy your show. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say something else. Next time, maybe. Good evening. You're on the air.
Eric.
Yes, go ahead.
Now calling about this show. Thank you very much.
Okay, that's good to know.
Okay. You know, the option of going out of space.
Wait, you're the same person that called about the other show.
Well, yeah, I said.
All right, make it fast, because we have other people waiting.
Okay, I think that you have to solve the problems on Earth. Forget about living on other planets. We have so many problems that are so...
Do you think we are ever going to solve all the problems on Earth?
No, not solve 100%, but address.
Come on.
You're seriously thinking, because we can't solve the problems here, or address...
How about we say this the next time that a president is considering sending troops somewhere? Before we send the troops there, why don't we solve all the problems at home? Why is it always the space program that has to be sacrificed for us to solve all the problems for
Okay,
us?
Stop. I did not say solve all. I misspoke. Not solve all.
Okay, well, just enough to prevent it from happening.
So the idea, if you think the solution is going to be, we're going to go and a millionth of the population is going to re-inhabit another country and do the exact same thing there, another planet, and then do the exact same thing there.
That's centuries away, if it's even going to happen that way. The thing is, you know, we have to go out and learn things. We've learned so much from the space program as it is. We have satellite technology. Do you know what satellite technology has done for technology? We've learned things in the medical field by experimenting in vacuums. There's so many things that we could be learning.
Now I see where you're coming from. You're against people who want to cut the space bum budget.
Yeah.
I see.
Of course. And, you know, I don't care if it's done through private enterprise or whatever. I just think we should be exploring and learning.
Exactly. I agree with that.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. And let's take this call here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Jacob calling from Canada.
Calling from Canada. What part of Canada?
I'm in British Columbia.
Wow. That's a nice place. What's on your mind?
Beautiful. Well, I was going to comment on the Mars mission.
Okay.
I'm completely in agreement with you on that. I totally agree that, yeah, we have our problems here, but so much more can be solved and learned by going to other planets and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you agree that it could easily be used by Bush as another thing to, you know, help his election campaign?
Oh, of course. And, you know, that was what tore me apart when he brought this up a few weeks ago. I loved everything he was saying, except I think he could have done it a lot sooner. You know, waiting until, 2018 to go back to the moon seems ridiculous to me. But I know, I mean, I'm a cynic. I know that he's just using this for political purposes. I would like for the mentality of the American public, which I think is already there, to enthusiastically, no matter who is in the White House, want to send missions out to space to learn about all these worlds that surround us. And we're so lucky we have so many. We have, you know, Europa and Titan and the planets and just all kinds of things we can be learning about.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, like I said, we can still have all our conflicts and whatever else we want to be doing here, and we can still be solving problems. It's not at the expense of solving problems.
Right, and also lots and lots can be learned. Like, there could very well easily be discoveries made on Mars that allow us to find cures for things here and discover new solutions.
Absolutely, absolutely. Of course, there's also the possibility that we could, you know, discover a hostile alien race which will come and destroy us. But, you know, life is a gamble. I'm sorry?
I think it's worth that risk.
I think so, too. Life is dangerous, and, you know, I just want to know more. While I'm here on this Earth, I'd like to know a little more about what's going on outside of Earth. I want to know. My thing here on this planet is for me to know, is there life on another planet? Has there ever been life on another planet? If there's one question that I want an answer to in my time here, that's the one.
That's right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. 631-632-WUSB. Only have a couple of minutes left. Super Tuesday. Today is Super Tuesday. And the political spectrum, I believe, will be changed after today as far as this particular political race. We'll probably have a front-running candidate. As I mentioned, USB News has projected that John Kerry will win everything. Maybe not the presidency, but everything in Super Tuesday land. since I can't read the teletype, I don't know what's happening right now, but the polls are still open. I don't think there's enough time for me to go out, down and register as a Democrat and vote, but it's a good suggestion from that other caller. Maybe that's a way to get around it. If anyone has any reason why that isn't a good idea, please let me know, because I'm seriously considering doing it. In some places, like California, for instance, they are experimenting with electronic voting today. Maryland, too, I believe. There are all kinds of technical problems. Actually, I'm seeing here that in New York there are some electronic voting machines. I'd like to know where those are. Basically, there were some technical problems, as always will happen, and they had to revert to paper ballots. Advocates of electronic voting say paperless ballots save money and eliminate problems common to old systems, but the technology brings a new breed of security concerns, like software errors and hackers that could make the results unreliable. In California, new security measures range from random tests of touchscreen machines by independent computer experts to a recommendation that poll workers prevent voters from carrying cell phones or other wireless devices into booths. Overall, some 10 million people in at least 2 dozen states were expected to cast ballots in primaries this year on machines built by Diebold, Sequoia Voting Systems, Electronic Systems and Software, and other vendors. And the electronic voting trend is accelerating. In November's presidential election, at least 50 million people will vote on touchscreens, compared with 55 million using paper. Wow. And punch cards and lever machines and all that. Now, as I mentioned, at least one place had to switch to paper ballots today because their new electronic voting machines didn't work. They say that the problems will be fixed quickly, they hope. Voters also had to start using paper ballots in Georgia's Effingham County. A spokesman for Secretary of State Kathy Cox said county officials apparently forgot to program the encoder, which is a device used to tell ballot access cards which voters insert into the machines what ballot to display. Great work, guys. A security issue also arose in Georgia. Georgia Tech student Peter Saustrom said he found 10 Diebold terminals sitting unprotected in the lobby of the school's student center on Monday. He photographed the machines in their unlocked cases. Frankly, he said, this makes me nervous, and it validates a lot of the concerns I already had. The paperless ballots eliminate problems like hanging chads and make it impossible to accidentally vote twice for one position. The machines also can toggle between different languages for people who don't speak English. But computer scientists have been protesting the switch. You know, if computer scientists are the ones that are protesting it, you really should listen. They're particularly concerned that few of the computers provide paper records, making it nearly impossible to have meaningful recounts or to prove that vote tampering hasn't occurred. This is something we're going to be watching very, very carefully over the years ahead. And it's going to affect us in all kinds of different ways. We'll be talking about it here and on Off the Hook as well. And, well, I guess we didn't get to the other phone calls, but how about we get to them next week? But we know the answers to all these questions. And I'm going to seriously look into this Mel Gibson character. We'll find out the truth about that. All right, stay tuned for the blues. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have yourselves a good, happy, and safe week. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.